Well, it's a great privilege to be with you this morning on this very special occasion, your 190th anniversary as a church, that over 190 years God has had a people here who've loved him and rejoiced in his name. Now, what I have to say this morning is, I hope, very simple, very straightforward, and I want to ask a question. And it's simply this: what is a Christian? Do you know? Is it someone who goes to church and keeps the rules? Is it someone, as someone said to me, someone who's a loser? What is a Christian? Well, the word was originally a first century nickname for the followers of Jesus, and the name has stuck. So a Christian is a follower of Jesus. Are we in an era? Well, one of the most famous followers of Jesus was the Apostle Paul, and as we've been reading, Acts chapter 26, one day he was giving his story, his testimony of how he became a Christian. Paul is standing before a king, Agrippa, and before the Roman governor, Festus, and other assorted VIPs. And recounting the day when he met with Jesus, he says, "This is what Jesus said to me." In Acts chapter 26, verse 17, Jesus says to him, "I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I am sending you to do what?" Verse 18, "To open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me." And there you have it in a nutshell, a six-fold description of a Christian. Did you hear it? So what is a Christian? Well, number one, Christians have had their eyes opened. Have you? "I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I am sending you to open their eyes." And many years ago, an old man lay ill in bed. He was an atheist. He said, "There is no God." And over his bed, he had written, "God is nowhere." N-O-W-H-E-R-E. And one day his granddaughter came to visit, and she was learning to read. So he said, "Read what's written over my bed." So she read, "God is." But the next word was a big word. She thought she'd split it into two. "God is now here." "God is now here." And the old man got a shock. And for the first time in his life, he realized that God is, and God is here. Do you see? A Christian's eyes are opened. They see that God is. God is here. And with new eyes, they look around them. Who made it all and out of nothing? God. Who made me? God. So here am I, God's creature, living in God's world, enjoying God's blessings, living as though God is nowhere. Have you ever been asleep? And you've opened your eyes to find that someone's been looking at you? Well, Christians, wake up. They open their eyes. And they say to God, "Who are you?" And he replies, "One who has waited long for you to speak." What brings them, though, to that eye-opening experience? It's the Bible. Through contact with God's Word, their life is invaded by an inescapable sense of God. So Christians have had their eyes opened. Have you? And number two, Christians have been turned to open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light. What's it like to be in the dark? The Spanish actress Loles Leon, a few weeks ago, she was awarded £39,000 damages. She entered a hotel room. She fumbled for the light switch in the dark, ended up falling down a flight of 18 steps and breaking her wrist and pelvis. Had she been in the light, she would have seen the danger and avoided it. She wouldn't have taken that step. When a Christian's eyes are opened, when the light begins to dawn, they see. They see the danger. They see not a flight of steps leading down from them, but they see a cliff edge called eternity. And if they continue on their present course, God is nowhere. At death, they will stumble over the edge to their ruin. They see the danger, so they don't take the next step. They turn. They turn from darkness to light, from their way to God's way, from what Jesus called the broad way to the narrow way, the way that leads to life. So a Christian has been turned. Have you? And number three, a Christian is under a new power to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan to God. Now, on the 18th of April, 1942, 16 twin-engined Mitchell bombers took off from the American aircraft carrier Hornet in what became known as the Doolittle Raid, very famous. It was just 4 months after the Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor, and their mission was to bomb Japan. On the last bomber to take off was a corporal by the name of Jake DeShazer. He'd grown up in a Christian home, but he turned his back on it all. But after dropping their bombs, Jake and his fellow crewmen had to bail out over Japanese-occupied China, so it wasn't long before they were captured. And now Jake and his comrades endured beatings, torture, starvation. In fact, the Japanese treated them as criminals. And as Jake endured the unendurable, he came to hate his Japanese captors with a burning hatred. But into his possession came a Bible. It's the book he'd been taught as a boy. It's the book he turned his back on. But as he read it, God opened his eyes, and he saw. He saw that he'd walked out on God, that as a sinner he was on that broad way that leads to destruction. But he saw something more, that God had sent his Son, Jesus Christ, not to condemn, but to save. And Jake turned from his sins to Jesus. He turned from darkness to light. And he became a changed man. This is what he says. He says, "How my heart rejoiced in my newness of spiritual life. Suddenly, I discovered that God had given me new spiritual eyes, and that when I looked at the Japanese officers and guards who had starved and beaten me and my companions so cruelly, I found my bitter hatred for them had changed to a loving pity. And now from the depths of my heart, I prayed that God would forgive my torturers." That's extraordinary, isn't it? Hate turns to love. How do you account for the change? He was under a new power. The power of God, to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan to God. After the war, Jake returned to Japan to tell the Japanese people of his life-changing message of Jesus Christ. And one of those who was converted was Mitsuo Fushido. He was the chief pilot at Pearl Harbor. If you've seen the film Tora, 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 he is the man who's flying around and who says, "Tora, Tora, Tora." He was in charge of the whole operation from the air. He was converted. Extraordinary, isn't it? Former enemies reconciled to become the dearest of friends. changed by the power of God. Christians are under a new power. Are you? And number four, Christians are forgiven. What else does it say? So that they may receive forgiveness of sins. Jacob Shazer again, he said, God gave me grace to confess my sins to him, and he forgave me and saved me for Jesus' sake. Now what does he mean, forgiven for Jesus' sake? Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I have wronged God. I have lived and played where God has forbidden. I've never loved God with all my heart, not even for a moment. And I've never loved my neighbor as myself. No wonder the world is as it is. The mess we are in. In the Bible's words, I'm a sinner. Can I undo what I've done? No. And real offenses demand a real punishment. And having sinned against an infinite God, justice demands an infinite punishment in the hell that lies at the bottom of that cliff. So is there an answer? What did Jake say? God forgave me for Jesus' sake. Can you see Jesus? His face beaten beyond recognition. His head crowned with thorns. His back plowed with the whip. And now he's nailed to a cross. Why? Because upon that cross, the sins of countless people who've offended God were put to Jesus' account. So that when God came to punish the guilty, Jesus took the blame. And because he took the blame for what others have done, everyone who comes as a sinner to Jesus can enjoy peace with God, the calm of sins forgiven. Forgiven for Jesus' sake. You see, it's not good people who go to heaven. It's bad people, forgiven by Jesus Christ, forgiven for Jesus' sake. Have you been forgiven? Number five, Christians have a wonderful inheritance, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place amongst those who are sanctified by faith in me. Christians have a place in the sun, a place in heaven. What have you got coming to you? What have Christians got coming to them? Can you imagine being the son and heir of Bill Gates? What could you do with his money, eh? What would you do? You could buy a football team, couldn't you? Buy a jet, have a mansion, you'd have hundreds of mansions. But one day you'd still have to leave it all behind. But Christians are children of God. They are sons and heirs of God. And their Father holds the universe in his hand. So what have they got coming to them? In one word, the Bible's word, glory. And it goes on to say, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. And supremely, that inheritance is Christ himself. That's why Christians love to sing. They're a singing people. You can't stop Christians from singing. People will tell you, read accounts of people who have been martyred for loving Jesus Christ. And that martyrdom still goes on today in many parts of the world. And so often they go to that place of execution singing. Change from glory into glory, till in heaven we take our place, till we cast our crowns before thee, lost in wonder, love, and praise. My friend, what have you got coming to you? And number six, Christians are sanctified, so they may receive the forgiveness of sins and a place amongst those who are sanctified, says Jesus, by faith in me. Sanctified, not a word perhaps we use, not a common word, but it's a very simple word. It simply means to be set apart. Christians have been set apart. For who? For Jesus Christ. The Christian life is never a wasted life. Now, you only have one life, don't you? What are you spending your life on? You can't spend it twice. So what are you spending it on? Christians spend their life for Jesus. They no longer live for me. Life is no longer about me, me, me. It's about him, him, him. And in losing their lives to him, they find their lives. There's no one like Jesus. How sweet the name of Jesus sounds. It's not just the word, it's what the word is filled with. And Christians have come to discover Christ. I was driving through Twickenham the other day, and we were in a queue. I don't know what it's like around here, but there's often queues around there, and the traffic was creeping along. And as I was in a queue of traffic, I looked at what was going on the pavement, and there was a girl. She was about 16 years old, and she was being spoken to by three community support officers, if that's what they're correctly titled. Anyway, as I looked at her, and they were sort of surrounding her, she had a look on her face as would break your heart. I don't think I've ever seen someone look so sad. It wasn't put on. She was actually staring straight through them and into the distance. And she looked lost. Completely lost. She looked without hope. She was also anorexic. And if I could, I would have stopped my car and got out and run over to tell her about Jesus Christ. I don't know what her problem was, but I do know that the only cure for a sick, sad, broken world is Jesus Christ. And I know whatever her need might have appeared to be, her deepest, her real need was Jesus Christ. And that if she'd messed up one life, the wonder of the gospel is that Christ would have given her a new life. Now, I don't know what she got herself into. We get ourselves into all sorts of things, don't we? What have you got into? What's got hold of your life? Is it worth your life? The only one worthy of my life. The only one is worth giving my life to and spending it for is Jesus Christ, sanctified by faith in me. So there you have it, in a nutshell, 6 marks of a Christian: to open their eyes, to turn them from darkness to light, from the power of Satan to God, so they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. Is it blind faith? No, the eyes are opened. Are your eyes open? Is it a step in the dark? No, it's to turn to the light. Have you turned? Is it some sort of self-inflicted misery? No, it's to step off the treadmill of sin and to live in a new way under a new power. Which was the better Jake? Was it the one who was twisted by bitterness, hatred, plotting, planning his revenge? Or was it the man transformed who now loves his enemies? Are you under a new power? And is being a Christian being, as it were, good enough to get to heaven? And I hope you see the answer to that is no, no, no. The message of the Bible is that good people go to hell, bad people go to heaven. If you think you're okay, you don't need forgiveness, that's where you end up. But if you recognize that I'm bad, I've messed up, and I come to Jesus Christ and I confess my sin, then I discover, like Jake did and every other Christian, forgiven for Jesus' sake. Do you live with the calm of sins forgiven? And is it to be a loser? Will you judge? One Christian said, a Christian gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. So where's your treasure this morning? Is it safe? And is it a wasted life? It's a life that's surrendered to Jesus Christ the Lord. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that's what a Christian is. So are you a real Christian? We've held up the Bible's picture, haven't we? We've looked at it. It's been drawn with a scripture pencil. But look at the picture. Does that look like you? Can you recognize yourself? No? Well, then you know what to do, don't you? It's to come to Jesus Christ. Put the matter right. You could put it right this morning. Lord, I've sinned. But you died on the cross to save condemned sinners. So Lord, save me. Make me a real Christian. Tell me, are you persuaded? You know, when Paul finished telling his story, when he finished speaking to Agrippa, Agrippa said this, verse 28. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? Having heard this good news, as you have, Agrippa was feeling the heat, but he held back." Are you holding back? Maybe you know this good news very well. Maybe it's the first time you've heard it. But are you holding back? He was so close, wasn't he? But in the end, he was lost. Why? Well, as we close in our remaining moments, why didn't Agrippa become a Christian? Why wasn't he persuaded? Why did he say, "Oh, a bit too fast, Paul"? Why? Because he loved sinning. You see, sitting next to him is a woman. Her name is Bernice. If she was alive today, she'd be one of the most photographed women in the world. She was beautiful, glamorous, fashionable, powerful, and Agrippa's relationship with her was immoral. History tells us she was a very immoral woman. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian?" Was it Bernice that held him back? He looked at Paul in chains. He looked at Bernice sitting next to him. He thought, "Well, if I become a Christian, this relationship can't go on as it is. Things will have to change. Things will have to stop." And as he looked and as he looked, he wasn't prepared for that. What sin is it that keeps you from coming to Christ? What have you got into? What's got hold of you that keeps you from Jesus? Is it worth it? Think of it. What is it? And you're willing to sell heaven for that? And you're willing to go to hell for that? And remember, if you come to Jesus Christ, you'll be under a new power. Not only will you be rid of that sin, but you'll be rid of the love of it. Why didn't Agrippa become a Christian? Because he didn't want to be laughed at. You see, as Paul gives his story, as he gives his testimony, Festus, the Roman governor, shouts out at the top of his voice, verse 24, he says to Paul, "You're out of your mind." And Agrippa thought to himself, if they call Paul mad, insane, and I too become a Christian, what are they going to say about me? And he didn't want to be laughed at. Is that you? Are you afraid to confess Christ? Are you afraid of what your friends are going to say? What your colleagues are going to say? What your family's going to say? They're going to look at you and they're going to laugh. And they say, "What, you, of all people, you become a Christian? And you're doing your arithmetic, and already you're thinking, well, if I become a Christian, I can hear them laughing now. I know what they're going to say. Let me say, if you got saved, you wouldn't care what people said about you. Not when you have Jesus Christ. Maybe you've been invited here this morning by friends who are Christians. Are they ashamed of Jesus Christ? What they can't get over is that Christ is not ashamed of them. And has shed his own blood to save them. Do you know, if you have Jesus Christ, if you become a Christian, you'd be happy to put up with a little bit of laughter when he suffered everything on the cross for you. And finally, why didn't Agrippa become a Christian? Well, he says it in his own words, doesn't he? It's all a bit quick. First time he meets Paul, Paul's trying to convert him. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? Come on, Paul, it's all a bit quick. Not yet, not now, not here, not today." Maybe he said to himself, "Well, I can always think about it later." Is that you? Come along here today. You think, "I don't know the preacher, never seen him in my life. Talks to me for about 25 minutes. He's trying to persuade me to be a Christian. I've just turned up. I'm just being friendly, neighborly, charitable. I've just come along, and you're trying to persuade me to be a Christian? Trying to convert me? Slow down, slow down." But where's Agrippa today? Where he's been for the last 2,000 years? In hell. When he's been there a million years, the hands on the clock of eternity will have moved 1 second. Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? But there was a moment, wasn't there, when he was thinking about it, he felt the heat, he felt the persuasion, he even uses the word persuade, because Paul, actually, you have been persuading me. But the moment passed, and he was lost. The story is told of a meeting with the devil and four of his angels. How to stop people becoming Christians? How to stop you from coming to Christ? And one demon said, "Well, tell them there's no God." And the devil said, "Well, then you have to look around them, don't they, to see there's a God? And deep down, you too know and believe in God, don't you?" The second said, "Well, tell them there's no heaven." Well, said the devil, "Most people believe in an afterlife. And you do, don't you?" So the third said, "Well, tell them there's no hell." Yeah, said the devil. "But their conscience tells them there's a day of reckoning. And you know you're guilty, don't you?" So the fourth said, "Tell them there's no hurry." Then Agrippa said to Paul, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian?" "Yes, Paul. What's the hurry?" And that's just what you're thinking. Let's sing a hymn.